Hi folks, how are you? To be honest, I'm quite surprised as to how much my voice is intact after attending the BAFTAs yesterday and getting very overexcited by some of the winners. Great to see Poor Things pick up some awards. Great to see Oppenheimer pick up an award. Mia McKenna-Bruce as well, the E.E. Rising star. Anyway, it was a wonderful night. Great celebrations and great after parties as well, I have to add. But listen, our latest guest on Soundtracking is composer Laura Cartman, who joined me to discuss her Oscar-nominated score for American Fiction. Written and directed by first-timer Cord Jefferson, who picked up a BAFTA last night, it follows a frustrated novelist professor who writes an outlandish satire of stereotypical black books, only for it to be mistaken by the liberal elite for serious literature. Laura's score draws heavily on brilliant jazz themes and will begin with her cue winner. Great, thanks. How are you?
I'm great.
Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Are you kidding?
I mean, there was so much to talk to you about in terms of, you know, when it comes to film and music. And can I just say kudos to you for setting up the Alliance for Women Film Composers as well, you know, in terms of something I really try and do as much as I can on this podcast is give the female composers a voice and a platform. And we've been lucky that we've done some live events where we've recorded things at the BFI and things. So it's been great. So yeah, it's wonderful when you hear of great things that people are doing like yourself.
You know, it's funny because I've been thinking about this a little bit today. I think that people don't think of composers looking like this. Every part of what this is, I think that there is kind of a vision or has been. It's the same thing. Like my wife's mother teaches a course in science. She's a professor, a very high level professor. First day of an undergraduate class, she asked them to draw what they think a scientist looks like. And they all draw Einstein, the women too. Like what you're doing in terms of getting, you know, a diverse group out there and people to see and hear what we are, what we do is really, really important because we've just got to broaden that perspective and continue to do so.
Absolutely. And congratulations on your Oscar nomination as well.
I know. It's so crazy. I know. Like literally, Nora and I looked at each other this weekend, my wife and I, and it was just like, oh my God, we've been running around doing things like shopping, figuring out what I'm going to wear, all that kind of stuff. And then like this weekend was the first weekend where we kind of like, oh, it's big.
It's so deserved. Big. And it's, do you know what's wonderful as well? I mean, I really want to hear about your kind of journey with Cord and the film. And it's such a big part of the experience of watching the film. It's so important to the way that the film makes you feel. And the way that you travel through the film and the emotions that you feel throughout the film, it's such an important character in the film. So congratulations.
Thanks so much. I mean, you know, this journey that I've been on with composing for film has always been fascinating, mostly because of this bond that you have with the audience, where the audience kind of, for some reason, and I've never figured out why, expects music. Right? It's like when music starts in the back of a conversation or in a scene or whatever, it's not like, oh my God, what's that? It's something that's expected as part of the vernacular of filmmaking. And it's so cool to be able, it's not so cool. It's a life's work to figure out how to really support the emotional resonance of a film with music. It continues to interest me very much.
How did American Fiction come to be presented to you? And what were the first conversations you had about what they were looking for, what Cord was looking for? Was he very specific? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, it all started out in the way that many, many unsuccessful attempts to get a movie started out, and that my agents said, will you make a reel up? Meaning, will you put together music that seems appropriate for a quote unquote jazzy movie? So I put together a reel. And I put jazz on there, right? Just like some really cool stuff that I'd done that was really straight out jazz. He said, no, not jazz, jazzy. And so, okay. So kind of film scorey jazz, you know. So then I did that and then they liked it, you know. So, but I think also what happened that I think was maybe more powerful than all of that is that I had been scoring the Marvels for director Nia DaCosta, and Nia and Cord were friends. And I think Cord reached out to Nia. And Nia said, she's great. And so that's the funny thing. It's like a twist and turn. You never know how something is going to come to you or how you're going to get involved. And working on the Marvels, which on the surface seems like such different kind of content. You know, it's a huge movie. It's big budget. It's big orchestra. And then this is a little gem. So it happened that way. And I met with Cord and the team, Ben LeClaire and Hilda Retzler, who's the editor. And, you know, we just started talking about what the possibilities were for the music in this. And of course, jazz was, I don't want to say the mandate, but was the obvious thing. I mean, the lead character's name is Thelonious Ellison. And his nickname is Monk. And of course, that takes you right to Thelonious Monk, one of the great composers and jazz pianists. And so then you really start to think about, okay, do we do Monk? Is it a departure from Monk? How can we capture the essence of Monk? Do we want to capture the essence of Monk? And so those are all the conversations that started happening.
Conversation about what it was about what you'd originally sent over that he connected with and stuff as well, because it is interesting, isn't it, that whole idea of like people's interpretation of a story or a character or a narrative or themes. You know, it's kind of everybody's perspective initially is different, but you had one specific idea and connection that was the kind of opening of the door to then go in to be part of this whole project.
When I first screened the film, and I did so alone before I had the job, they had put one of my pieces in as temp. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's a good sign. That means something worked for them. But really, it's a very interesting project to score because it's not as obvious as it might seem. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty hard. Basically, the temporary score was all classic jazz. And when you hear those songs, they feel great. You know, they're things that I'm so familiar with. They're beloved pieces of music. The problem is, of course, they're not, you know, specifically crafted for the film. And the film changes emotions very quickly. So you have to be really musically gymnastic, right? You've got to be able to go from like a tragedy to neutral to comedy very, 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 very fast. You know, within a like you know, there's one scene in the film where there's a very sad moment. You know what? I'm just going to spoil it because everybody needs to go see the movie. There's a funeral, and you're in this kind of funeral scene, and then this guy walks across in a and is a pest, and immediately you have to change course and score. You've got to go from something that's very sad to something that's kind of comedic. So it needed to have a score. So then the question is, well, how can you do a score and how can it feel like jazz, but also be able to do all the things that a film score has to do?
Absolutely, because I feel like almost that kind of like free form nature of a lot of it is really replicates the kind of almost free form emotion that comes with all the different storylines that are going on in a way, you know, in terms of, you know, when you have Sterling's character kind of Clifford pop up, or, you know, the kind of Tracy's character and then she's gone and all, you know, it's kind of like it's so, the whole thing is so unique and kind of. And I didn't know much about the film before I watched it, you know, about a month ago now. It's so stayed with me and kind of the rhythm of it and the kind of just the unique nature of it as well. And I think so much of that is down to the fact that the music is there and it's not kind of low in the mix. It's kind of, it's like I'm here and I'm here for a reason kind of thing.
I'm here for you, fans. I'm here for you. No, the key to the whole thing was two major themes, which is the monk's theme, which is the, which is kind of craggy, which is a 5/4 meter, an odd meter. And it's got the humor and it's got the quirkiness of monk in this particular context. It also goes to someplace kind of beautiful, so that when we get to his romantic life with Erica, with Coraline, it can transform into that. Theme is the family theme. And the family theme is what really hangs you together because you're right, you have the switch, right? You have Tracy and then you have Sterling, you've got Lisa and then you've got Cliff. So you have to have something that ties it together. And of course, what ties it together is this fractured but fundamentally deeply connected family. So the family theme runs through all of that, runs through the stuff with Tracy and then you know, all the stuff when Cliff comes on and takes you know, into the pool scene, which is the family theme is a bossa nova, you know. And so I think the score does what it does. What we wanted, and I think what accomplishes, thankfully, is that it does feel like jazz, but it's highly, highly thematically oriented, highly, highly planned and tied together in a really structural, you know, almost formal way.
got such a beautiful, varied collection of work that you've worked on, you know, not just film, but all the other things that you've done up to this point in your career. But jazz is very much at the heart of a lot of that. So was this a kind of dream scenario in a way, in terms of being able to bring all that to this particular medium?
Yeah, I think it really was. We have a joke around here in LA, which is that, you know, don't let the jazz police come out and get you. It's like, for those of us who've kind of grown up and trained in jazz, sometimes you need to mitigate that a little bit, or at least cover it up so people don't know. But on this one, I could be loud, proud, and out loud about jazz. And it's funny because we were talking about the Marvels. One of the major characters in the Marvels is the villain, and for the villain, I really wrote a jazzy thing. But I don't think anybody perceives it that way. But in the end credit, I had Elena Penderhughes, who was the flute player in American Fiction, literally jam over this da di da da bo ba. You know, she's like playing all over the place. It's wow, that's wacky. And I remember when we got through the playback of the film, and Kevin Feige, of course, was in the room. He said, "Oh, it's so great to hear that theme in its full blown thing." And I thought, "Oh my God, I got all this way without him noticing that there's like big time jazz in the, you know, secretly hidden in the context of like, you know, scary music." But yeah. It sneaks in a lot of places, but in this place, I could be really very on the surface about it.
I also loved the What If series as well. I've got two boys, and we were kind of obsessed with that. It's such a great concept. It's such a great idea, because it kind of gives your brain the opportunity to kind of go places with all these characters and worlds and planets and universes that we know. It was so clever.
But it's the same thing, you know, like everybody thinks that, I mean, not everybody thinks, but, you know, there's this whole concept that, you know, you're doing an independent film and then you're doing this for Marvel and it's so different. You know, it's not. I mean, What If is thematic too. You know, you've got Peggy Carter and how she relates to Captain America, and you know, and so what's the musical thematic material that's associated with that? It's much the same journey that we take with the Ellisons in American Fiction. I mean, Marvel is also a family in its very dysfunctional way at times, I suppose. You know, if you talk about people like killing each other, whatever. But we digress. I love the MCU as well.
It's wonderful that you're able to kind of straddle so many worlds in terms of, you know, kind of what you create for, whether it be a big Marvel production or whether it be video games or whether it be, you know, kind of, you know, stuff for like BBC Studios or American Fiction, all that kind of stuff. It's great that you can kind of navigate all these different worlds. Never a dull moment, I imagine.
I'll tell you, there's actually a reason for that. And this would be the first time that I've said this in any of the many interviews that I've done this fall. You know, for a lot of women composers and a lot of underrepresented composers too, not just women, the walls are tall, right? And they've been very, very hard, impossible to break down. You can't break down the wall, but there is something you can do, is that is you can walk around it. And so basically my life has been, as a music maker, a series of pivots. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to be sort of open-minded and to be capable of navigating the pivots that I've had to make. Now, I love writing music for video games. We're doing two games right now. It's super fun and it's got different technical challenges. You know, video games came out of a pivot that I made, you know, some 20 years ago when I was working on television movies and they kind of went away. And so you've got to figure out how to do the next thing. And so it's not like a building block. It's not like a step up. It's like, will you do this? And it's like, okay, let's do that. Let's go around this. Okay, let's do that. And so I think that I've been, you know, now it's culminating in really a kind of an excellent year of doing a lot of different things. And then because they've been high visibility projects, people have noticed. But this is something that I've been doing for a long time. And a lot of my my colleagues also from other underrepresented groups have been doing as well.
As a performer as well, you know, performing your music, you know, do you get enough opportunity to do that? I mean, one of my favorite things is, you know, is going to live playback sometimes of when you get the opportunity to be in a theater and, you know, you've got an orchestra there playing the score. Occasionally I get the chance to go down to Abbey Road or Air Studios to watch the orchestra being recorded. And then sometimes, just now and again, the film companies will, you know, pay out for an experience for people to come and watch a few suites be performed and things like that. And any of those opportunities are just joyous. But for you, do you get the opportunity to, I mean, outside of this kind of, you know, the moving image world as well of performing, how important is that for you?
You know, it's a really, really funny question. Another question that I haven't been asked. So, you know, we had the privilege of recording at Abbey Road this year, and it was absolutely divine, the best musicians in the world. I've always been sort of uncomfortable with performing, but I've always secretly wanted to do it. And I remember when I was a student at Fontainebleau, and I was in France, and I was studying with Nadia Boulanger at that point, right before she died. And I met a guy, and you know, he was a pianist, and he said, "Well, come to Paris." And you know, and so I took the train with him, and we went to the Left Bank, and we first went to a little tiny club, and I started singing, and then he said, "Let's go someplace else." And then we went to this huge club, and there were all these people, it felt like there were 2,000 people in the audience. Maybe there were like 300 people, and I started scat singing, and I couldn't remember any of the words. Amazing. You know. And it was like, it was just amazing. It's one of the best memories of my whole life. You know, I was 19 years old. It was great. And a week ago Thursday, we performed some of the music from American Fiction. And I took the mic and sang along with it just for fun, just to see what it would be like. And it was really fun. And this project has been very, very special for me because I have done a lot of playing and performing in it, almost not on purpose. Because Cord was a first-time director, it was really important to me that all the demos sounded good because he hadn't had that experience of listening to kind of stuff where you say, oh, don't worry, we'll record it later and, you know, we'll do all that stuff. It like everything, I wanted everything to sound good off the bat so then he could decide whether it worked for him with picture or not. It wasn't like, oh this will really work later, you know, that kind of thing. So we just started recording a lot. And because the piano's right there and because I have fingers, you know, I sat down and I played a lot of stuff. And then it became kind of a thing. And for the stuff that I really didn't like my own playing on, I brought in Patrice Russian, who's just an amazing, amazing player. And then I had this band of people I've worked with for a while, plus Elena Penderhughes. But we've been out performing it a little bit. And I'm going to do more of it. And it's fun. It's really fun. It's like, I have a mixed relationship with it because I'm so used to kind of being on my own and quiet at home and then you go out there, but I think I like it.
You've got like an entire wall of instruments behind you that you need to
play in front of the public. I think maybe I won't play any of those in front of people. Like there's a PVC saxophone in there I think probably should not be touched, but the piano and a little bit of singing here and there, maybe I'll do that.
It's crazy when you say about this film being Cord's first feature film. That is insane. The achievement of it is just extraordinary, really.
He's super smart. You know, it wasn't like working with someone who didn't know what they were doing. I mean, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah. It's so accomplished just in terms of also just you can feel the kind of the freedom that the cast have been given as well to kind of really flesh out those. Not that they needed it because the script, I imagine, was brilliant. But, you know, just kind of, you know, that's part of bringing in great talent into roles is because you know they're going to bring something to that. It's so fantastic to watch. It really is.
So true, yeah. And I think the thing that Cord did, he surrounded himself by really good people. He let those people do what they do well, and then he would shape it. And that's what any great director, executive producer in television, what good makers of film do. They bring in the right people, let them do their thing, really, and then decide whether it works for them or not.
I mean, Jeffrey's one of those beautiful talents. He's so captivating to watch, and it's just wonderful to see him in this kind of lead, and him kind of just, oh, it's great. He's wonderful on screen.
That's what I love about his performances is he's just commanding, and he really and every one of his gestures, everything he does means something. And as a composer, that's really, really powerful because if he raises an eyebrow, if he moves his mouth or tilts his head, he's a physical actor, but his motions are small. So it's kind of like how it gives you something to dance with and to play with.
When you were working on those kind of final pieces of music, were you very much right into performance then as well?
Yeah, really, really we were, because there's a lot of dialogue in the movie, and I started to think about, especially Erica Alexandru, who plays Coraline, and Jeffrey. I mean, they sound like saxophones. Erica's got this kind of edge to her voice, almost a break in it that sounds like the way Coltrane would play, and Jeffrey, of course, has a resonant baritone. So oftentimes you would have like an alternation between the sax or the flute, and then the rhythm section would back, Jeffrey or Erica, and then we would come back into the band. So I did think of them as being a part of our group.
So great. I love that. You need to name some instruments after them. That's the
Yes,
next thing. Yeah.
I will. I will.
You said you're working on a couple of games as well at the minute. What about in terms of other projects, in terms of film and TV? Have you got, I imagine you've got some other stuff potentially on the go, or
Yeah, we do. We've got the two video games. I've got another film that's going to be coming up quite soon, and then I'm also working, really excited about this, on a musical that basically. We have licensed the rights to a film called Dance Girl Dance. It was directed by Dorothy Arzner. You probably don't know who she was, but she was the only woman directing in Hollywood during the Golden Age. And in this film is Lucille Ball and Maureen O'Hara.
wonderful.
I see you looking her up. She's massive, and she is totally unknown. So we've gotten the rights to this fantastic movie. We're going to musicalize it, and then weave her story as a woman working in Hollywood in the 40s and an out, lesbian at the same time, living her life and being, one of the go-to directors in Hollywood.
That's fantastic. I love those films that kind of unearth those things. I mean, I really enjoyed Babylon, Damien Chazelle's film. I love that kind of, and he's another one who loves his jazz. I mean, Whiplash for me, that's the thing, is like I find with certain films, the world of jazz is one that I don't know enough about, but I love film. And when film kind of like welcomes me into that world in a way, it's just, whether it was Birdman or Whiplash and now your film as well, it's just kind of like, oh, I want to know more. I want to be part of this gang because this is great. It makes me feel awesome. So it's so great when film can kind of really give you a kind of an insight or a kind of connection, or hold out an arm to you, pull you back into that world. It's lovely.
I think there's so much of a history of jazz with film. I mean, so many of the composers in the 60s, Lalo Schifrin, Michel Legrand, John Williams at that time, were really writing a jazz, Henry Mancini, how could I forget him? That this was kind of the essence of what so many scores really played with this idea of jazz and film music. So it's not a new concept, It just is one that we haven't heard a lot out of in the past few years. I mean, with the exception of, you're right, Damien Chazelle stuff.
Laura, it's so great to chat to you, and I'm so
Thank
excited
you.
to see what's next. I hope you bring your performing self to London and give us
Oh,
a
I
little
want
rendition
to.
for sure.
Oh, thank you.
Get to Ronnie Scott's on in Soho and do a little performance for us. That would be amazing.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, and I really appreciate your time, and I wish you all the best of luck and huge congratulations
Thank you so
on
much.
this wonderful project. It really is quite fantastic.
Edith, thank you so much for having me on.
Great to chat to you.
You
Take
too.
care. Bye. The score to American Fiction, that's Love All of You, rounding off your first soundtracking of the week with Laura Cartman. A huge thanks to Laura for taking the time to talk to me. American Fiction is in cinemas now, and you should definitely go and seek it out. It's brilliant. If you want to hear my chats with Damien Chazelle and Justin Hurwitz about the scores for their collaborations together, head to edithbowman.com or wherever you get your pods. Please do leave us a rating and review us whilst you're there. Follow us on our socials. We're at Soundtracking UK. And please don't forget our YouTube channel for loads of extra video content. Now, you won't have to wait too long for more of us, as we have a bonus episode of Soundtracking coming very soon with Fernando Mireles and Ed Cortez to celebrate the 21st anniversary release of City of God. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.